Warning, this broadcast of Ohio is on Fire features entertainment and honesty of an intense nature. The opinions and views that are expressed on this episode do not reflect the views of WVSU 106.9 FM or any of its affiliates.
Do you have any matches? Try setting it on fire.
Fire, 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 fire.
Fire, fire. Ha Dugan. This is the show. Where Ohio froze down. Ohio is on fire. I am Daniel Diesel, and we are live. It's Monday. We're in Dayton, Ohio. Fairborn, Dayton, Ohio. It's a combination of two cities. And I'm glad to be on the air for another episode. This is episode 175 of the show Where Ohio Froze Down. And it's going to be a classic tonight because I got some music I want to showcase from local bands in the state of Ohio. I have plenty of those to showcase tonight. And also, I have my guest for the evening will be Juliet Frumholt. If you're familiar with that name, she was a former DJ here at WWSU 169 FM, and now she is one of the leading voices of Yellow Springs radio station. Yellow Springs, their radio station is an NPR affiliate. I'm going to talk to her about that tonight, and we all have things to talk about because she's also involved in the comic book community. She's involved with a lot of things. She's a woman on the go. And she's a legacy here at WWSU, and I'm going to talk to her. That's coming up later on this show. So anyway, but thank you for everyone that's listening. Thank you. It's going to be a great show tonight. And you can call me here at 937-775-5555 if you wish to talk to me or Juliet, or if you have a request, please call that number. And also, you can join us live at the website for this station, WWSU1069.org. We have a chat room. If you send me a chat, I will be able to pick it up and talk to you. Of course, it's got to be appropriate because it's weird and stupid. If you're being a stupid troll, I will not respond to it. I'm pretty sure Juliet won't put up with it either. So make sure it makes sense of our show, but talk to us in the chat room. Romeo and Juliet is by far the most popular because that's one that everyone knows. Romeo and Juliet. Even if you don't know nothing about medieval fairs, you know who those two guys are. One of the most classic Shakespearean plays in stories. Now, I could read you the whole story, but that would take 9 hours, and I don't have 9 hours of airtime because I got to talk to Juliet Frumholt tonight, and I got music to play as well. Have a great, great night of fun. So I don't have 9 hours to read that story, but I do have some 5 interesting facts about Romeo and Juliet that you guys might be interested in knowing about. And this is thanks to interestingliterature.com. I got this list. So here's number 1 on the list. Shakespeare makes Juliet a 13-year-old girl when she goes to be with Romeo. Yes, that would not fly in 2018, so let's move on from that. Factoid number 2, the first reference to Montagues and Capulets is in the poetry of Dante and not Shakespeare. And I'll read a little bit about this. In Dante's early 14th century masterpiece, The Divine Comedy, he makes references to two warring Italian families. Come and see who you are, negligent Montagues and Capulets, Monaldi and Fabulepesci. I probably said it wrong. One lot already grieving, the other in fear. Purgatorio, Cantor 5, the families appear to have actually existed, a bell with different spellings of their surnames in medieval Italy. So these people are based on real-life people, but greatly changed for story so they can avoid lawsuits, because I think they had lawsuits even in medieval times. I kind of wonder what a lawyer would look like in 1300 Italy. Number 3 on this list, the play's most famous line is more than a little baffling. Perhaps the most famous line in the play is spoken by Juliet, Romeo, Romeo, where thou art thou, Romeo. Of course, where thou doesn't mean where, it means why. But that doesn't exactly clear up the whys and the wherefores. The question still doesn't appear to make any sense. Romeo's problem isn't his first name, but his family name. Montague, Surely, since she fancies him, Julia is quite pleased with Romeo as he is. It's his family that are the problem. Solutions have been proposed to this conundrum, but none is completely satisfied, in fact. All right, now number four on this list, the famous balcony scene probably doesn't involve a balcony. It's more than likely, according to this website, it could have been on a boat, it could have been out in the middle of the field, based on real-life events, but they wanted something more dramatic and something more exciting and sexy for the viewers and readers, so they made it a balcony. That's what turned people on back then. And maybe balconies turn people on now. I don't know. Maybe there's a balcony fetish out there on the internet. I'll check into that. Number five on this list, thousands of Valentines are written to Juliet each year in Verona. And this is kind of its own pastime over in Italy, especially this part of Italy in Verona. People, they make up letters, but they rhyme to Juliet, and then they usually send them to the post office, their nearest post office within Italy, wherever they live, what city they live in. Or sometimes they drop them off at shops that involve love, like candy, flowers. It's a thing. It's not a big thing here in America, but this is something that they do over in Verona. And actually in throughout parts of Italy as well. It's a big deal. So that's something I got to do. One of these days I got to go to Italy and take part of this some pastime. And they do this around Valentine's Day. So it's around the month of February. This is a big deal. So those are five strange facts about Romeo and Juliet. So I got it out of the way. I think it's now time to get to a commercial break and then music. So I'll be right back with some more Ohio is on Fire.
You are listening to WWSU 106.9 FM, Wright State University. Across this state, across this country, across this continent, today, right now, College Radio is united. This is College Radio Day.
We're back live with Ohio's on Fire. I am Daniel Diesel. I think it's now time for everyone's favorite segment. It's now time for OMVP. And that stands for Ohio's Most Valuable Pedestrian. Round of applause to the OMVP, as this is an award that's not really an award, but really a shout out to someone or a group of people from the state of Ohio that did something very interesting. Of course, there's always a backstory that leads into OMVP. So I'm reading this from IndieOnline.com. So I'll get to the story. It's a long story, so I'll read some of it. But this was written by Dennis Hazell from the Ohio News Media Association in Columbus. And this is actually his commentary. So everything I'm reading is his quotes, as this was his commentary. Here we go. I like the idea that National Newspaper Week and Great Books Week both happen from October 7th to October 13th. And journalism has been famously and accurately described as the first rough draft of history. The authors of great books must paint complete pictures from the rough sketches journalists start. These are countless examples, such as The Best and the Brightest, the late David Halberstam's account of the politics and tragedy behind the war of Vietnam. Jake Schaefer of Slate.com found a 1953 edition of Public Administration Review in which Phil Graham, the late publisher of the Washington Post, said this: "The inescapable hurry of the press inevitably means a certain degree of superficiency. It is never within our power nor our province to be ultimately profound. We write 365 days a year, the first rough draft of history, and that is a great task." All right, now back to Dennis Hazell. That remains true in today's overheated America. At least we've been there before. Now I'm going to read. I'm going to go down to the last two paragraphs. Now this is a quote from Greg Mayers. He says, "The local community newspaper plays a vital role." Greg says, "We need to embrace change yet continue to serve the public with timely, accurate information that will engage readers for generations to come." Now this is the last part from Dennis. "Truer words have never been spoken. Please join me in thanking Greg and several thousands of your other Ohio newspaper neighbors and across America doing National Newspaper Week." So really good article. You can read a whole thing at indieonline.com/opinion and then look up Dennis Hazell. Hazell spelled H-E-T-Z-E-L. Look him up. And this is latest post. So it's a journalist talking about the current state of journalism and how people should appreciate good journalism when they see it. And he kind of touched up on it, which I would agree. We're kind of in an era in journalism that's not going to be looked looked too brightly upon in years to come. That's a real big problem. So Dennis Hetzel, I salute you for this episode, episode 175. You, sir, are, for this episode, O-M-V-P, and that stands for Ohio's Most Valuable Pedestrian. Round of applause. This band I'm going to showcase now, they are from Flowerpot Records out in Cleveland, Ohio. And they are an Ohio band. Actually, they're from Berea, Ohio. It is Crash and the Dogs. Of course, Crash is spelled with a K. I'm going to play their newest album release, two of the tracks from their latest album, Past the Trees. So first off, I'm going to play Where She Goes. That'll be the first track I play. And then I'll play a second track. So stay tuned to more Ohio is on Fire.
The ship's out the harbor, and where it goes we'll get no sleep. The times are a-changing, my friends all came home, and your eyes dance naturally. Yeah, your eyes dance naturally. Where she goes, where she goes, don't follow her home. Where she goes.
The next track I will play is Never Enough. Please stay tuned with the live interview with Juliet Fremholt. You're listening to Ohio is on Fire.
And fading story, whose hands are cut and eyes are closed, as water broke apart the stone. It drifted to an open field, nothing like I knew. Far away from thoughts I steal, yet close to a never-ending second with the people that I love, never getting close.
I've heard a lot of great things about this next guest. She did a lot of work with WSU back, I would say, early 2K, late 2K, and she is now a major voice here as she works for the Yellow Springs NPR Associates. She is the one only Juliet Fremholt. Say hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. It's crazy to be back here after 10 plus years.
You know what? I'm not worthy. All right, bow down to thee, because yes, I have heard a lot of great things about you, but I want to ask, since you have volunteered here in the past, what was the first thing you thought of when you saw this station in this room again?
Gosh, coming back here, the first thoughts that I always have is how much work it took to get us here. I was here during the remodel of the Student Union.
Yes.
So these studios that we're sitting in were not like this when I started at WWSU. But
okay.
By the time I left, we had moved in here. They had been completely remodeled.
Man.
We moved down the hall all the way down to where currently there's a lounge, like under the staircase. We were there for about a year and a half temporarily while this whole section of the building was rebuilt. So it was a lot of work. It was a lot of like back and forth moving the radio station twice to get here. So just reminds me of all the good times we had getting this space ready for all of you to enjoy in the future.
Man, so like you said that the radio station was like down the hall. So was it an actual room or was it like out in an open space for people like it is now? Because I'm trying to have a visual.
Okay, so originally when I first started training as a DJ at WWSU, we were in this space that we're in now, but it was laid out very differently.
Yeah.
The room that we're in was actually two separate rooms.
Okay.
And then when they started the union remodel, what happened was they couldn't have anybody in any of these spaces. So WWSU, The Guardian, all of the folks that were kind of down this hallway got moved to other places on campus.
Yeah.
For the radio station, that meant that we picked up most everything, moved down to a temporary space, which was that lounge. It had glass on the walls at the time and a fireplace.
Oh,
and the glass was really flimsy, so it was maybe not the best for broadcast, but they shoved us in there in a way that I can't even believe we all fit. We were there for about a year and a half to 2 years. Oh. And then my last year here when I was general manager, that's actually kind of why I stayed on in college a fifth year, was because of the remodel here.
Yeah.
We moved back to this space and started broadcasting here.
Man, I would like to have done that. That sounds wild. Broadcasting from a tiny glass space.
It was an adventure.
Now I wanted to ask, why did you get involved with WDSU to begin with? What was your inspiration?
Well, I always loved music. I was working in, my first job was working in a record store.
Okay.
So I was always into music. When I started here at Wright State, my first year, I wasn't involved with WWSU. My best friend and I were in college together. Everything was great. You know, we were driving into school every day. And then she got this amazing opportunity to move and go to art school. And so when she moved, I was kind of like, oh, I guess I should make some friends on campus other than her. And there just happened to be a sign at the beginning of the quarter, you know, volunteer to be a DJ, come learn more. And I was like, well, that sounds cool. I love music. Radio has always interested me. It sounds fun. I'm sure there are cool people there if they're playing music. So I inquired, I walked in, I started training, and that changed my entire life. I mean, literally, it changed my entire, the whole course of my life changed just looking at that sign and walking in here one day.
I can relate. That's kind of how I felt when I first did this, because I always loved radio, and it was like walking to the big leagues. Like, man, this can be you if you want to be. I can totally relate to that. What show did you do here when you were here at WWSU?
I did several. I was actually trying to remember the names of all of the different shows, because I did different time slots depending on what my class schedule was, and then working here full-time as well. The one I remember, my last show before I graduated, was called Closing Time.
Okay.
And that moved around to a couple of different time slots, again, depending on my schedule. But it was kind of the seed of the idea for one of my shows on WYSO Now, Kaleidoscope.
Yes.
It was a mix of indie rock, local music. I had a couple of bands in the studio, but not many, because we had just moved into this space and we were just getting used to like how to do that here. But that was like the end goal, was to do live music on the radio. And that's what I do on Kaleidoscope. I did a techno show for a minute, at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was pretty fun.
I should tell you, they've changed the rules here. Like, the latest a DJ can have a show is midnight.
Oh, that's
well, but you have to start your show at 10. Like, you can start a show at 10.
Yeah.
So that's as soon as you can start, when the latest you can be on is midnight. So yeah, they don't do the 24/7 thing anymore.
Yeah.
But that's wild.
Yeah, it was surreal.
Were there glow sticks on this show of yours at 3 a.m.?
No, it was very chill techno. It was more chill, like trip hop and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Very European inspired.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, we love European techno. That's fine. Now, you mentioned you as a GM. I was going to ask you, what else did you do here at the station? You mentioned earlier as a GM, and I'm fascinated by that because I've always been curious the GM tree here at the station. Like, I know the last four dating back to, it was John Jelani. I know he was before Mike Kurtz, unless I'm wrong about that. So when did you serve?
Okay, so I can fill in your tree a little more.
Yes, the tree.
Prior to Mike was Sean, whose last name I cannot remember.
But it was Mike Kurtz and then Sean
Martin.
And then
Sean, okay.
Then it was H.R. Downey. Okay. Then 2012 he did that. Then it was Shane McGrath after H.R. Okay.
So then before Mike would have been Jonathan Gallion, who I trained, my very good friend.
Yes.
It was me, And then prior to me was a guy named Specs, Mark Kineth, my good buddy.
Yeah.
Prior to him was Rod Hisong, who's still a broadcaster.
Yes.
And prior to him was Matt Hughes, who everybody knew as Frog. And that was my whole duration there.
And your GM term, where would that fit under? Was that before, who was it before?
Specs was before me. So I was program director from 2004 to 2006. And then I was GM the 2006-2007 school year.
Okay. Well, I'm recording this, so I'll definitely be able to hear this back. And because I'm trying to put the ultimate tree together, and I'll probably post it on our community page.
Oh,
like, these are their GMs in our station's history. I think it'd be cool. I don't think this has ever been done with interstation before, so it's kind of, because with the U.S. presidents, we make a big list of those, so I think the WDSU GM stacks up to the U.S. president list. So anyway,
if we get our own Hall of Animatronics, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that's the last thing we need to do. All right, so that is really good to know. Now in 2010, this station, something I'm very proud of personally, we won the best radio station of Dayton, Ohio, which that was my first year with the station. The group picture is out in the lobby. It's a group of us, which I don't know if you have a chance to see it, but have you seen that picture before today or at any point in the last 5 years?
I had, yeah. The crew that was here in 2010, a couple of them sent it to me, which I felt like a proud parent. It was awesome.
Because like I said, your name came up a lot, like, of people that, oh yeah, Juliet would have been really happy this happened. Did you, now myself, I'm going to ask you this. Myself, I haven't spent 6 years total with the station. You are considered one of the great contributors to the station, perhaps during our golden period. I've been told that our golden period was like probably 2007 to 2013, and that's what other people have said. And why the golden period ended, I don't know. That's probably another story for another time. But during that time frame when you were volunteering, did you feel that the station was about to do big things, and how did you know?
Yeah, definitely. There were really great people here my entire duration here, and really the group that was coming up as I was, you know, getting ready to graduate and leave Wright State was really promising. There were some amazing folks here that were really poised to do really great things.
Yeah.
I think in terms of golden ages, though, every radio station that I've interacted with or worked at has had ebbs and flows of that. They've had really good times and not so great times, and times of rebuilding and times of ramping down and back up.
Absolutely.
So I think that although that was certainly a golden age, I would never want it to be the end all be all of golden ages, because I think there's so much opportunity here to still do great work. And you know, that's just going to be dependent on having the right combination of students with the right energy to serve their audience at any given time.
Yes, and that's a fair answer. I think like any organization, there's an up and down period, and I think we're doing very well right now. I do think there was a down period after that, but we're doing really good things right now. So I think, I would relate to that very much, up and downs. So after your time here in college, you wind up going to the NPR affiliate in Yellow Springs, which is, I like to call it WISO Radio, because it sounds like the word WISO mixed together. But how did you make the jump from college radio to NPR? What did you do?
Well, I actually started volunteering at WISO, WYSO, while I was still in college. A friend of mine from WWSU, Christopher Olvis, who I worked with here, he was volunteering there. And this was after a period where WISO had had a really down period. They didn't have a lot of volunteers and they were starting to rebuild. And so he knew that I was really passionate about radio, especially independent radio. That's kind of my wheelhouse, is independent media. And he invited me to come meet their program director and their then general manager. I started volunteering there. That ended up translating into a role as a fill-in host for Nikki Dakota, who's still my colleague to this day.
Yes.
So I filled in for her one summer while I was still in college. Really came back 2006, 2007, focused in on running the ship here at WWSU, though I was still involved at WISO as well, but I really had to focus my time here. And then continued on as a volunteer at WISO, and that really serendipitously led to a paid position. And I've been on staff for about it'll be 10 years in January, but with my volunteer time there, I've been with the station about 13 years.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
A nice tenure there. Now, regardless of whether you've worked with this person or you've just listened to him on the radio, who's your favorite radio presenter?
Oh,
or
gosh.
Your favorites?
That is so very difficult. I admire so many people in this business for so many different reasons. You know, Susan Stamberg, who's one of the founding mothers of NPR, really comes to mind. She really blazed a trail for women in radio. She was the first woman to host a national news show, which is a really big deal. You know, we, all of us women in media are really grateful to her. Of course, Ira Glass, everybody says that in public media.
Yeah, I've heard
media.
Of him. He's a pretty good fella.
He's pretty great. But I'm also really in awe of a lot of the up-and-coming media makers. There are some amazing people doing work in podcasting and just getting their careers started that I'm really in awe of them. I'm also just really, in general, like in awe of my colleagues. Several of them I grew up listening to, and now I'm working with them every day. So that's a real unique joy and pleasure to be able to do that.
Yes, and I'll try to answer that myself briefly. I like anyone that dedicated their time here to station it with their full heart, and they cared about what the radio was all about. The two I really have always liked are friends of mine. I always liked Lee W. Mallon, the sports broadcast, and he was great. And he still does it now throughout the area. Another guy, I don't know if you ever met him. It was Lauren Goines.
I know Lauren really well. Yeah. Yeah. Lauren and I were in an independent film together too.
Really?
Yes.
We'll have to talk about that later.
Yes.
I didn't know about this because I consider him a good friend of mine. We haven't, last time we spoke was 2 years ago. We bumped into each other, but he's the one that got me into the station. I'm forever indebted to him. But he was great. He had a great voice too.
And I got to give major props to Lee W. Mallon. That guy has so much heart for this work.
He's the man.
He was just getting started in my last few years at WWSU, and I really admire his energy and his perseverance for this work. Like, he's really kept going for years and years, and has really just put the time in into being a broadcaster.
I'll continue on our journey of college radio and NPR radio. So what do you do to find your music for your shows?
It's a mix of things. So we get a lot of service from the labels. You know, we have record labels and independent artists as well sending us music for consideration for air. So I certainly get music that way. I'm also just an avid record shopper and music listener. So I find other things that, you know, don't come in the mail. And then as far as the local music goes, I go to a lot of local shows. I interact with a lot of bands. So I'm both picking stuff up, but having done the show for nearly 10 years now as well, a lot of the local musicians also know, like, if you're getting ready to release something, be sure to send it to me so I can consider it for air for the show as well, since I am showcasing local music. And really, other than, WISO, you guys here at WWSU, and then WUDR at UD, we're the only three stations that are really playing local music in the area. So a lot of the bands know, like, these are our options. Let's be sure to get them the music.
Absolutely. Now, when you was here, because when I first got started, we had something called the College Music Journal. Mm-hmm. That is now obsolete. And the thing that's replacing it, which I don't think we have a deal with them at the moment, is NACC Radio, the NACC Radio Chart. Now, I was searching around, and by golly, I found someone on there. You won one of their DJs of the month. So how did that come about, and you winning that award?
I don't know precisely how it came about, but the interesting thing about NACC charts is I do two charts for them. So I do charts for Kaleidoscope, and then I also do charts for my other show, Alpha Rhythms, which is a show that I grew up listening to on YSO. It's about 30 years old. It's something that's had many hosts, and I am the latest host. I've hosted it for 11 years, I think. I was a co-host at one point, but I've done it full-time for maybe 8 out of the 11 years. And that show in particular is a really weird genre. So it's like new age, electronica, experimental music, stuff like that. And so I got approached by NACC when they were starting the chart for that genre, because there aren't very many shows around the country that play that type of music. So I think that might have something to do with it. And it's really great because that music is kind of seeing a resurgence. There's some really interesting stuff happening there. So it's good that it has a chart now and it's getting some exposure. So I think that's how that happened, is because I was one of several DJs that really got the, what they're calling the chill chart on NACC started.
Okay. Very interesting. All right. I'm going to ask you, one last thing about, radio in general. Some radio broadcasters are about to move ahead with their careers, such as you. And, however many talented people who got started in college radio, unfortunately, their career ends at college radio. Now, is there room for everyone? Do you think, is there room for everyone to be in radio? And how do people find a way to continue on after college?
Yeah, so there's absolutely room for everybody in broadcasting and in audio, for sure.
Yeah.
I know that it does seem intimidating because, you know, the commercial market seems really, really closed off. And I briefly worked in commercial radio, and I can tell you, for me personally, it was a really unsatisfying experience coming from here, where I had the opportunity to do so much and be so creative. That said, there's public radio. There was a new, a sort of new opening up of LPFM, low power FM licenses via the FCC. So you're seeing community stations pop up around the country that are really freeform and funky and awesome. I got to visit one in Tacoma Park, Washington, or Tacoma Park, Maryland, right by Washington, D.C. last summer. And it so reminded me of being here, like just so many different people doing different things. So there are those opportunities. And then, of course, there's the podcast sphere, which is so amazing. I teach podcasting as well. And like, you can do anything in that space. Like, you can do something super broad that interests everybody, or you can drill down and do something so very specific that you're really targeting like a very, very specific community and creating content for that community.
Yes.
And that's so cool. So I would say, like, the sky's the limit. If you want to stay in broadcasting, you have to be a little creative. You have to be a little scrappy and be willing to like do some digging and find out where, you know, where you fit in and what's available to you. But that said, there is a space in broadcasting for everyone.
Well, that's very encouraging. I think anyone that feels dejected, because I've had my struggles, I enjoy being here, but it definitely is hard to get any type of position out there. So that's very encouraging. Encouraging words from you, Juliet. So here's Sevkin and the Carriers with their track Pennywise. I Can't Find No Light, Monster.
Hello, my dear friend. A long time it has been since you came around. Darkness follows you. You sink ships with their crew when you come around. I cannot take you in. It's too much now to lose. If you stay.
We are back with Ohio is on Fire. I'm still here with my guest, Juliet Frumholt. Right now, I want to talk comic books, because I think you know a little thing, you know a thing or two about comic books. So let's talk about that. What is your favorite comic book series?
Oh my gosh, that is like the hardest question ever. There are so many things. There are so many good ones, and you have to think, like, are we talking like current, ongoing? Are we talking about of all time? I mean, like, you know, Sandman would be on my list for sure, but that's been over and done with, you know, save for the pop-up origin series and all that for many years. Stuff I'm reading currently that I'm really loving, Wicked and the Divine is excellent. I loved Saladin Ahmed's Abbott series, that short-run horror series. That was really, really good. Kelly Sue DeConnick series that I can't say the name of on the radio. Thank you, FCC, Blank Planet.
Yeah. Okay.
And Paper Girls right now are some of the ones that I'm really reading and loving. But there's so much out there. There's such a richness in the comic genre.
Absolutely. And I think the comic movies are doing very well as well. A lot of people would say that we're currently in the golden age of comic book movies with Marvel, DC, and other independent releases. Do you believe it's going to end anytime soon? What do you see? Well, let me ask you this. What do you think is going to happen 5 years from now when it contains major motion movie releases of comic book movies?
Well, I think it's a little hard to say at this point. You know, Marvel's been riding really, really high, but we're getting ready to see a lot of the heroes and actors that we've known and loved for a long time in the MCU retire.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Chris Evans just posted his farewell on Twitter the other day.
Yeah.
Like, we know that Infinity War, the resolution of that is going to mean a lot of changes.
Yes.
The other thing that's getting ready to happen in terms of Marvel is that we have the Disney-Fox merger.
Yes.
And so we're seeing the current X-Men series, which was really, even predating Iron Man, was kind of the rebirth of the modern comic book movie, like post-Burton Batman.
Yeah.
We're seeing that end, and it's yet to be seen whether X-Men will eventually be woven back into the MCU or not. So there's a lot of uncertainty right now. On the flip side of that, we're also seeing all this cool stuff happen in television with streaming services. We're seeing beyond just Marvel and DC, we're seeing Archie get into the game with Riverdale and the new Sabrina the Teenage Witch series. So I think that comics in film/television are still going to be strong in 5 years, but it might be very different players in 5 years than what we're used to now with the MCU dominating everything.
Yes, you're probably right about that. But let me ask you, which movie franchise do you like better, the MCU or DC's universe?
MCU for sure.
Absolutely. I agree.
Not to rag on DC though, because, you know, Matt Brassfield, my partner, also, you know, the founder of Sparkle Comics, which we're going to talk about in a minute, he pointed out to me that although the MCU is dominating now, let us not forget that really DC was the leader back with the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Yes.
DC was consistently doing good work in film when Marvel was just trash for the longest time. You know, they had these cheesy, like, made-for-TV movies. Like, they're charmingly bad now. But it took them a long time to catch up, whereas DC was really leading the pack out of the gate for many, many years.
I would agree. It was because I was a kid during that time, but I would agree, looking back, I think DC had the upper hand at first. And now the shoe's on the other foot at this moment, definitely. Mm-hmm. So once again, another ebb and flow in one of the industries.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Do you think, but let me ask you, if DC Universe, they continue to struggle at the box office and get really bad reviews, do you think they should reboot everything, start a new, like, universe?
I don't know. I don't know that that's the right solution, because you have some really good stuff. Like, you have Wonder Woman, which is fantastic. Gal Gadot is doing really, really great work. I don't know that rebooting again is going to be the right solution for anybody, because I worry that people that aren't the diehard comic fans that are going to go see it no matter what to see how it is are getting weary of the constant reboots from DC. Like, which Batman are we on? How does that work? You know, like, if they haven't seen, you know, if they saw the Burton Batman and then the Christian Bale Batman, mm-hmm. and now there's another Batman, like people are getting really confused. And so I don't know what the right solution for DC is other than just like better writing, like tell better stories. But rebooting to me is just as troubling as not rebooting at this point.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I would like to see this current universe try to improve because, well, I mean, the big thing was they screwed up with Batman and Superman. I didn't like Ben Affleck as Batman at all, so I'm happy he's out. I mean, I kind of liked Superman, and that actor is walking away from that. So I don't know who they'll get to replace. I haven't heard who's going to replace him. And those are the two big ones. Like, I feel like if you screw those two up, that's why they're in kind of the hot water that they're in. But mm-hmm. I hope they pull through because I do like some of the things they're doing. I like the Suicide Squad. I did like that film. I'm probably in the minority in that because a lot of people crapped on it. But I liked it. My big gripe in the comic book world is that classic Golden Age characters, they keep getting rebooted every 10 years or so. At some point, I really feel we need to create new characters that can eventually replace them for good, and we can have new stars. When do you think that will happen? Do you think that will ever happen?
Yes and no. It will in some degree, and it won't in some degree.
Okay.
Like we're always. It would be weird to me to not have Superman and Batman and Captain America and the Hulk.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I am so weary of the constant universe reboots because as a reader, I feel really, really jerked around.
Yeah.
But I'm loving some of the new takes on characters. I love Miles Morales Spider-Man. I love Kamala Khan.
Yeah.
One of the things we're seeing in Marvel is that they somewhat successfully and somewhat not, they're able to weave in some new characters along with your old favorites or make new iterations of old characters where you have somebody taking up that mantle. I use Kamala Khan as a perfect example.
Yeah.
Carol Danvers is still around, you know, in a different role.
Uh-huh.
And Kamala Khan is this, you know, young, awesome character who was inspired by that character and takes up that mantle of Miss Marvel. And that works. Same with Miles Morales. Like, he works so well. I've seen other instances, even in Marvel, where it doesn't work so well.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been particularly fond of the Amadeus Cho Hulk storyline.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just me. Maybe it's just not ringing true to me. But I think there's a way to strike that balance of getting new and interesting personalities in while still honoring the mantle of the heroes that we've come to know and love.
Yes.
And then there are also like all these great indie books where there are these
Absolutely.
New characters being developed that are going to be everybody's
and
new
I feel
favorites.
Like they're getting ignored. Yeah, there's a lot of good indie books out there, which perhaps in due time they're popular enough. I think anything gets made into a movie, but I feel like they're always going to take a backseat to like the Ninja Turtles, which I love my Ninja Turtles.
I gotta love Ninja
then Batman,
Turtles.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I tell you what, dude, elaborate on that. Me and a friend of mine, we had an agreement that we would love to see like a passing of the torch. We would like to see a movie that featured Drake Wayne, which is the son of Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps, and we would like, actually, this friend of mine, he actually would like to see a continuation of the Tim Burton Batmans with Michael Keaton returning as Batman, but he's now an old man. And he now has a son, and he passes the Batman torch to Damian Wayne, and then Robin comes along as well, and Red Hook. So this new series that continues in the Michael Keaton universe, because it is believed, although technically the Val Kilmer one was supposed to continue that universe, it felt like it didn't because it had a new director, had a new writer, and it had virtually new everything almost. And that's supposed to be canon. A lot of people, there's a conspiracy theory that it might be separate franchises because they were so different. So the Michael Keaton universe with Tim Burton, there should be a new one of those. And he passes the torch. I would love to see that.
There are so many ways they could do it too, because, you know, in comic books, we have the advantage of multiple universes. It's established in both Marvel and DC.
That's true. You're right.
Like,
split universes.
I just saw the Into the Spider-Verse trailer this weekend.
Yeah.
And like, that's doing exactly that. You're taking Peter Parker, Miles Morales. You're taking Gwen Stacy as Spider-Man. You know, the Spider-Man Noir from the offshoot comic series and smushing them all together because it's comics and you can do whatever you want. So, like, there are ways to make this happen. It just takes, like, really creative writing and directing and really innovative storytelling to make it.
Absolutely. And that excites me. That's a really good point. I don't really think about that option because, yeah, in the books, they have multiple universes, and in movies, they haven't done that yet, but maybe they will. I want to ask you now, you are a comic book creator yourself.
Yes.
Do you remember the first comic book character or story you ever made?
It's, you know, it's a little tricky to say because I've been a writer kind of my entire life. I've been telling stories or making up stories. And when I was really young, I don't know, like, sort of what was delineated as, like, this is a comic book versus this is, like, a short story. Yeah. I can remember creating comics with my friends when I was in elementary school, sort of based off of like the idea of Lois and Clark, the TV show, like, hey, what do superheroes do the rest of the time, you know, when they're not being superheroes? So I can remember doing that. I don't draw very well. I can draw a little bit, but my style is not really comic style. Yeah. I've done a couple of short things for some of my friends' anthology series.
Yeah.
That was a little later, kind of right out of high school and into college.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of always been in my wheelhouse. But this really was Sparkle. It's kind of the first time I've gotten to create like an actualized like comic book that I've written and really, you know, work on that creative process actively on an ongoing basis.
Yes, I want to talk about Sparkle Comics based out of Dayton, Ohio. Now, for those that don't know what Sparkle Comics is, what do you guys mainly focus on in your books?
So we're an independent comic book company. We kind of operate as a collective. There are about 10 writers and artists. Some people do both. Some people, like me, they just write. Other people just do art. We work together as a team. So we have Sparkle, which is our main brand, and that focuses primarily on sci-fi, fantasy, adventure, action, those sorts of things. That's not to say we won't do other things. We're kind of open to, you know, whatever our creators want to make. Yes. And then we also have Bloodscream Comics, which is our horror imprint. Think of it as the Vertigo to our DC.
Absolutely. Now tell people at home about the people that work at Sparkle besides yourself. You work there and who else is involved?
Well, so I'm a writer, and then I also do a lot of the sort of print prep. Like, so I take the pages in from the artists and get them ready to go to print. I'm also sort of the company's de facto business manager as well.
Yes.
My partner, Matt Brassfield, is our editor-in-chief. He's a writer, and he's our company's co-founder.
Yeah.
We have Jason Young, who's an artist, writer, also our co-founder. He's been working in independent comics in the Miami Valley for years and years. He also has his own company called Buyer Beware. So Matt and Jason's combined energies, they've been friends forever. They were roommates. That sort of is how Sparkle was founded. On the artist side, we have Jeff Potter, Don Stevenson, Damian Brunk, Jason Gilmore.
Yes.
Teresa Daniels is an artist and writer.
Yeah, I've met her a few times.
Yeah, Teresa's great. Natalie Claude is a writer. Her first book is getting ready to come out later this month. We have Stephen Alexander.
And I've met him a few times as well.
Yeah, you've met Steven.
Yes.
Forgive me if I'm forgetting anyone. And I can't forget Mark Rockhotz and Nay Ed. They are our two non-Miami Valley contributors. They are from Spain. We work with them remotely. They are very dear friends of ours. And they are amazing artists. Mark is a penciler and inker, and Nay does inks and colors. And they are both fantastic to work with. So we are Dayton and beyond, so to speak.
Yeah. Yes, and it sounds very promising. Yes. Where can people find out about your radio endeavors in Sparkle Comics?
So for radio stuff, I'm on all of the social medias as Sonic Persephone is sort of my de facto username. And I post about radio stuff there. You can find info on Kaleidoscope at facebook.com/kaleidoscoperadio or wyso.org for all of the station stuff, including my work.
Yes.
For comic book stuff, we have sparklecomics.com and then bloodscreamcomics.com. We are also on all of the social medias as some variation of Sparkle Comics. They're on a couple of sites, there are some underscores in there, but just search us and you'll find us.
And yes, my recommendation for anyone at home, if you are a parent and you have kids that need to read a good comic book, this Christmas, buy a bunch of Sparkle comic books, stuff their stocking with candy, and Sparkbook Comics, and Juliet will thank you later.
That's
so,
right.
So do, yeah, do, so do it. Do it. All right. I think that's all the time I have for you. Juliet, it's been my pleasure having you on, and good luck with everything coming for you.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate being back here.
Well, you're welcome, Juliet. Yes, that was Juliet from Holt, so check her out in the area. I'm going to go ahead and play this band out of Cincinnati, Ohio. They are Electric Citizen. They released a new album earlier in September. I'm going to play two of their tracks, Hide It in the Night and Father Time. Because this is from their new album, Helltown. So I'm going to go ahead and play those tracks. You're listening to Ohio Is on Fire here on WVSU, 106.9 FM, Dane's Right Choice. Get paid for any of these shows. This is a nonprofit show, as well as Eventide Podcast Network. All shows are nonprofit. As podcasts such as the Drive-In Podcast and Don Smith's Alive, which he's on here tomorrow night. He is on the Eventide Podcast Network, and it's awesome stuff. So I'm happy to be part of the network. So that's where you can find me and learn about my show. With that, it's now time for the final message. I want to talk about Grandma Effie. Yes, for anyone that knows me and that's listening right now, you're probably surprised. You probably did a spit take of the water, if you're drinking water, of course. But yes, I want to talk about Grandma Effie. Yeah, she was a very important person in my life. Last week, this past October 2nd, which was around last week sometime, was the 6-year anniversary of her passing, and it was a bad moment in my life to lose her. And, of course, she has a birthday later this month, so this month, October, is a significant month for my Grandma Effie. And I'll share some happy radio stories I have that relates to my Grandma Effie. Some of the memories I have of her does involve listening to the radio. She listened to a lot of, when she was growing up, she was really into big band music. Now, I imagine that was probably the mainstream sound during that time. But she did like big band music. She would listen to, there would be these older stations. I know there's one particular station. I forget the name of it, as a matter of fact. But they do play like classical stuff from way back 1800, sometime in the 1930s. Older music. And there was a station that she'd listen to. She'd listen to stuff like that. Of course, then she listened to country music and folk music, which that was mostly because of my grandfather. His favorite music was country, but she would listen to that. She'd listen to 50s bebop. She was really into that. So she was a product of her era, I would say. And she liked the 60s. She listened to 60s rock and roll music. I think at some point, yeah, she didn't like disco. I think it was around disco she turned off, because she when I knew her, she mostly listened to the stuff that I knew that she really liked. I mean, she let me listen to music that I like, but the music that she enjoyed was country, jazz, big band, and of course some early 50s bebop, some of that more peppy bebop stuff. That was the stuff I knew that she really, really liked. I remember a song that me and my grandfather, my grandfather and my grandmother, one of their favorite songs as a couple, they really liked the Letterman, and their track was If I Fall in Love, This Will Be Forever. I think that the track is If I Fall in Love. I forget if it is or not, because I haven't heard that song in years, but I know it was by the Letterman, and that was from the mid-50s. That was their song, and yeah, so that's, and it's been years since I've heard it. It probably makes me too emotional. That's probably why I don't play it, because I get really upset, because it's really good, but it reminds me of them too much. So that's probably why I probably haven't heard it in like 5 years, 4 or 5 years. But so I listened to that. Of course, she loved listening to the news. She was the type of person that wanted to know what was going on in the world. So she listened to the news a lot, WHIO, the weather. She listened to, she listened to WHIO TV on the radio. And then she would listen to other stuff that was on AM stations. And there would like be news channels on that. So she would listen to it. But she would quickly turn the station real quickly. She liked to jump from one station to the next. So those are my happy memories. No, I just remember, I do have one happy story I will share that relates to radio and my grandma. I mentioned earlier, my favorites are the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. When I was 9 years old, that movie came out. It was the third movie in their original movie trilogy. Of course, that third one I liked it okay, but I didn't like it like I did the first two. It was kind of campy. The sock puppet machines that he used for the turtles wasn't as good. So as an adult, I see it was kind of a lame movie, but as a kid, I loved it. I wanted to look forward to it. One of the main songs that was featured in that film was Tarzan Boys by Baltimore. Tarzan Boy by Baltimore. My grandma, I guess, picked up on this. I guess she called in one of the radio stations, and I forget what the station this was now. She said she called them in because they took requests. That was when other stations besides college radio took requests. So this is a time that's gone by pretty much. She called in. She knew the track. I guess she looked into it. And one day I was sleeping. It was probably like 10 in the morning, and the radio woke me up. And grandma was like, listen, I think you should listen to this, Daniel. And that song came on. It was Tarzan Boy. And I was so excited. It just got me out of bed. Like, oh, I can't believe it. So, and she did that just for me. So that was a cool, happy memory. Yeah, I was probably 8 or 9 years old at the time. So, Grandma Effie, rest in peace. It's been 6 years since you've been gone. And of course, the 2 years I was on, my first 2 years in radio, she listened to every show that I did. Of course, I took a 3-year hiatus. And if I knew if she was going to pass, maybe I shouldn't have taken a long hiatus. Maybe I could have tried harder maybe to get on elsewhere, but that's how it works. You know, you get on where you can get on. Plus, I was really depressed. Like, after this, when I was gone, I was dealing with depression. So I had to be gone anyway. That's probably why it took me so long to get back. So my grandma, she was happy. She listened to every show I did. Like from 2010, from 2009 to 2010 was when she would have heard me. She listened. She gave me feedback, and it was great. So once again, here's to Grandma Effie. 6 years you've been gone. And it's been way too long. So until my next episode, when I have my co-host join me for some help in doing this show, Ohio is on Fire. Juliet Frumholt, Why So Radio. Creepy Halloween music. That's the way it is.